Hello. This is our book review day, and I have only two books to talk about with you today because I have an interview that I'm going to get into after we've just mentioned the book. This second one, which we will get to in a moment, is called Aboard a Flying Saucer, and obviously you know this is going to be a highly controversial subject. I have the author in the studio with me, and we're going to talk to him very shortly, but before we get into this strange and challenging subject, I'd like to talk to you for a moment about something much more familiar and close to us. And now to get to our second book, Aboard a Flying Saucer, written by Mr. Truman Bethlehem. You know, in this 20th century, I think most of us would acknowledge that it's a mistake to say anything is impossible. But we have become so skeptical that perhaps the pendulum has swung from the complete credulity of, say, a couple of hundred years ago when people were ready to accept anything. Now we have come to the point where it's difficult to accept anything at all unless we can touch it and feel it and smell it and call it concrete. Well, this book, Aboard a Flying Saucer, is Mr. Bethlehem's true experiences of a meeting with space people from the planet Clarion. He was out in the desert one night when this spaceship landed, and he talked to the woman captain and her crew of men. He tells that these people, who spoke English incidentally, were Christian, that they had overcome the forces of gravity, that they traveled without any apparent motive power that he could see. They were dressed in a rather odd fashion. They spoke in high sing-song voices, but spoke perfect idiomatic English. Well, as a consequence of these experiences, Mr. Bethlehem found himself in trouble with his family, at least some of it. He found his friends incredulous and somewhat scoffing on the subject, and he refers to it as the most difficult period in his life. Well, he has been kind enough to come up here today and talk to us, and I would like to ask him some questions, if you'll permit me, Mr.
Certainly.
Bethlehem. You know, the first thing I'd like to ask you is if you were interested in this subject of space travel and the people who might exist on other planets before you had this experience.
Not at all. I have never in my life bought or read a science fiction magazine, and I wouldn't have believed my own mother had she been alive and told me that this thing could exist one second before I saw it. I wouldn't have believed her. I would have laughed at her.
I see.
That was that unreal to me until I actually saw it.
Then you can easily appreciate how it must seem to others.
Certainly I can.
Who hear your story.
I really understand it when they seem to act as though it's incredulous.
Well, Mr. Bethlehem, when I read the book, the thing that occurred to me, I think, at the end, most forcefully, was this. Now, on the one hand, you had had this incredible experience, which had you very excited, almost doubting your own sanity.
That's right.
And on the other hand, you had people who were making fun of you and questioning your truthfulness.
That's right.
Well, the second time that you met these space people, why didn't you get something that you could show them to prove? I mean, some concrete thing to take back with you.
I tried that even from the first time. I told them nobody on this planet would believe such a thing, that I could hardly believe it was true myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we know we're real, and you know we're real. I said, it doesn't seem real to me. It doesn't seem possible. And it doesn't seem possible that you could be real human flesh. And she said, yes, if you don't believe so, you feel my flesh and see. And I asked him for something concrete to show to the people. And she said, possibly at some time she may give me a picture. I tried to take a picture I didn't have a camera with me the first time, but after that I carried one almost day and night.
Well, did these people feel that it was important at all that we know about them, we here on the Earth?
They did. They seemed to think it was important, but they weren't anxious in proving it to anybody. Let people find it out for themselves. And many, many people have seen them. They found the place where it sat down in the desert. And they've seen the people come into a restaurant or seen them in the restaurant. They didn't see them either come in or leave, but they saw them in there.
Mm-hmm.
When they left, they left as mysteriously as they arrived.
Well, you were saying in the book, if I have it correct, that these people in there on Clarion, that there was no disease, no death, no concept of time and space as we have it, no problems of any kind?
That's right. They did not mention death, but they told me that they lived, the woman captain told me she expected to be around for 1,000 years. And I asked her if she knew our time and distance and colors and directions and things like that, if she was understanding exactly what she was saying to me and what I said to her, and she said she certainly did, that life was different on their planet than here to that extent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should think if they had so much to offer us that they would have wanted to introduce themselves and let us benefit from all of these...
Well, I'm pretty sure when the right time comes, they told me as long as there was any strife on this planet, we would not have space travel. But as soon as we were aware that strife was non-existent as far as necessity was concerned, then we would have peace and that they would have a message to help us with. Not one nation against another, but all nations together. And they would live, all the nations here will live as one race of people with one religion. They'd live in that manner, and strife will not be a reality very long.
You mean one universe rather than
yes,
one world?
Yes, the other planets and this planet here in connection would all live a universal peace. And we have had our last major war, I'm sure.
Well, I certainly hope you're right in that respect,
Mr. I'm sure from what they said.
Mr. Bethrum, what is your theory of why people are so reluctant to accept your story?
I had a minister, I read his sermon, and he said he was going to talk about space people coming and saving the people here in case of disaster. I phoned him and gave him a book, and later he told me he didn't believe in it. And I asked him why, and he says, I don't believe in anything that I can't see and put my hand on. I said, have you ever seen or put your hand on God? And he said, no. I said, then what are you preaching about? He says, I really don't know now. So people are that way. Actually, we don't know what to believe or what not to believe.
Well, it's true that all new ideas have never had an easy time amongst human beings. And I might mention here, incidentally, that perhaps some of you have read Frank Scully's book, Behind the Flying Saucer.
Yes,
there has recently been one published by a retired Marine major, Major Kehoe, about a flying saucer. Life magazine covered the subject quite, well, let us say... neutrally, not coming to any conclusions, but presenting the evidence for and against in their magazine. True Magazine has also done that, and it is a very controversial subject. It is not by any means just dismissed by people who think seriously on this subject.
I'm sure that all air forces in the United States, all air force bases, are well aware of UFOs, as they call them, coming from other planets are extra. There are extraterrestrial. They're metallic and they're intelligently controlled. Each Air Force base in the United States, I'm sure, is aware of that.
Well, Mr. Bethrum, you mentioned that I think the thing that impressed me more than anything else is concrete evidence of something strange, and it seems a shame you didn't say that. Were your clothes, the clothes that you were wearing, if I got it right,
that's
you leaned
right
against the spaceship and later you found that they disintegrated.
That's right.
Did you save the clothes?
I took them out to the job to show to the men on the job, and I expected just to use them for wiping rags and nobody would use them. They laid there for several weeks and finally disappeared.
Did you ever take them to a laboratory for
no,
analysis?
No, I never thought it was of that importance. For some reason, the people that have had this opportunity to talk to these people have never actually got anything beneficial to prove that they have actually talked to these people. I had a note given to me in Chinese and also one in French, and I have them photostated and put in the book.
Were those analyzed in a laboratory?
No.
Is it a kind of typewriter? Or?
No, it is apparently an American typewriter. They told me they could pass as the people of any nation wherever they were at, and they would use the implements of that.
You said that they communicated with each other telepathically, didn't you?
Also vocally. They did both ways. I know that they could do it without voice and with voice also. And I would just say that they have developed a science and a knowledge higher than ours. They told me that the Earth planet was the newest and lowest in evolvement. It is the only planet that they know of that is inhabited, that does not have space travel, and that has any strife whatever.
That's something of a blow to human conceit.
Yes, they were not very happy about the situation on Earth here. They also told me that through mental telepathy or thought transference that they could prevent wars and things like that. And I think now that they have actually done it, even with our president. He is the first one that has ever had a Secretary of Peace, and I'm sure he would deny it, but I'm also very sure that they have put that thought into his mind.
Mr. Bethrum, you had 11 meetings with these people from Clarion?
Yes, ma'am. 11 separate contacts with them.
And these are recorded in your book. Have you had any meetings since the book was published?
I have seen the people several times, and on the streets, and I've seen the spacecraft over my home and in the air over different locations. It's been reported over towns where I spoke at the exact time I was speaking, in fact. But I have not seen them to get to talk to them.
They haven't landed again in your...
They haven't landed to where I could talk to them on their spacecraft. I've seen them on the street, and I've seen them in meetings, I'm sure, also. But I could not get to them to have a talk with them. They would just disappear when you try to talk to them. They would either just be leaving or have something else to do.
These experiences and the publication of your book, Mr. Bethrum, have meant an entire new life for you, haven't they?
It has, and it hasn't benefited me financially, I can tell you that. A lot of people thought, well, I had it said one time that I was making as much money as this famous piano player, and... Actually, I made much more money working at construction work, which is my happy way of earning a living. But I believe I have a message for the people of the world in this book, and I'm going to follow it through.
Well, Mr. Bethrum, it's been kind of you to come up and talk to us,
Nancy.
And what you say is certainly, well, interesting is a rather inadequate word.
Every word in that book is true.
Thank you for coming up, Mr. Bethrum. And we might mention here, incidentally, that Mr. Bethrum will be at Dodgson's Bookstore this afternoon. The address is 2238 Tulare Street. He will be autographing copies of his book. So why don't you drop over, if you have the afternoon free, to Dodgson's Bookstore. You can meet Mr. Bethrum, get a copy of his book, and he will autograph it for you. Those two books that I spoke to you about at the opening of the program were by second, of course, Mr. Truman Bethrum's Aboard a Flying Saucer. Thank you for being with us today. See you tomorrow.
Today's program was on the subject of book reviews. The Nancy Allen Show is brought to you each weekday, Monday through Friday, at this same time.